Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Did you know that October is Kink Month? So we are going to celebrate with Dr. Susan Block. Hello, Dr. Susie. Why are we celebrating with you? I have an idea.
Hello, Dr. Diana, and it's always a pleasure to celebrate with you. If nothing else, just celebrate, you know, Tuesday. But yeah,
exactly.
It is Kink Month.
Yeah, yes, it is Kink Month, and this is the third show that I've done with you in a relatively short period of time. You have so much to say in your book, The Bonobo Way, The Evolution of Peace Through Pleasure. I encourage listeners who haven't heard our part one and part two to go back and listen in the archives. But since this is Kink Month, we're going to focus on Bonobo BDSM. And,
yes, we are.
Yes.
That's true.
And
Kink Month is a great time to focus on that. It kind of happened that way. Because
yes.
I just discovered that it was Kink Month a couple weeks ago. A little shout out to Hercules Leotard for bringing it to my attention and to the stock room for kind of creating it in much the same way that Good Vibrations designated the month of May as Masturbation Month. Not just to say
right.
You're only supposed to masturbate during May, but just to bring awareness of the positive aspects of masturbation during the month of May, to make it a kind of educational month. And I think that's the purpose of October being Kink Month, is to educate people about kink. And, you know, people get kinky around Halloween anyway, right?
They do, and they love to dress up and often as their alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
So, but go
role
back
play.
To Dr. Susie and talk about the stock room. How did they influence this being named, October being named Kink Month?
Well, they are a store in the good American capitalistic tradition. They're trying to sell widgets, in their case being handcuffs and blindfolds and gags and St. Andrew's crosses. So, you know, it's a good time of year to do that, getting a little chillier, although not here in L.A.
Yeah.
But, people want to put on the handcuffs and dress up for Halloween and maybe do a little role play, put on a rubber mask, be their fantasy, which they're afraid to be all year round. So Halloween is a time to confront your fears and sometimes express your fears. I always say, fear can be an aphrodisiac. That is a little bit. A little bit of fear is like a spice in your enchilada. But watch out. Mm. Too much spoils the meat. You don't want to get too afraid.
Beautiful
or you get
analogy.
Into the anxiety realms. And then you have to go to a therapist, which is why you and I, you know, stay in business.
Exist. Yes. But we add on a lot around, because you have a radio show,
mm-hmm.
and since I will be in Los Angeles this Saturday,
you will be on my show.
On your show, I look forward to that.
But, you know, we do radio with pictures, too. I mean, we
that's
do radio.
Right.
It's you can listen free, actually, on drsusanblock.tv, as well as in Bonoboville, our new social media site inspired by the bonobos, and a portion of all proceeds, whatever we might get, does go to help save the bonobos, who are highly endangered, the real bonobos, that is, in the rainforest of the Congo. As well as to keep the human bonobos going here in Bonoboville, Los Angeles. And you will be visiting next this coming Saturday, actually. We're very excited to have you and some kinky guests, the Mistress Helly Hellfire, the Preacher and the Porn Star, and Amelia Dark.
Wow. So people can access that Saturday night starting at 10 p.m. Pacific time, and that's drsusanblocktv.com.
Exactly. And you can listen free, and then if you want to watch, you can join. You can either join drsusie.tv, drsusanblock.tv, or you can also join Bonoboville, which is right now free, and on Saturday night live, you can see the show for free if you join Bonoboville, our new social media site.
Terrific.
You know, so now that we've gotten the business out of the way, let's get back to Bonobo BDSM. In honor of Kink Month, that's what our focus is.
Right.
And, yeah, that's, you know, an interesting combination of terms. I'm sure it might seem a little odd to some people to combine the idea of masters and slaves and dominatrices wielding whips and chains and torture devices along with what we know about the peace-loving bonobos.
Yes, but first,
you know,
Dr. Susie, first I'd like to just say what I know as a sex therapist, and that is that what kinky sex might say about a person, and maybe even how it can help your relationship. Because I think people who practice BDSM tend to prioritize sex. They make time for it. They're accepting of their sexuality, and they communicate openly with their partner. And for many people, it probably took them a while to come to terms with their sexuality, meaning that they've given their sexual preferences a lot of thought. And they actively have discussed these preferences with their partners and or partner. And so being upfront about what makes you satisfied is a key to your fulfillment as both a couple and an individual. And you know, I often say to people, no, I don't often say this, but sort of a play on words. So a four-letter word that would help your sexual relationship a lot is more, not F-U-C-K, but T-A-L-K. Talk.
Yes, talking is an aphrodisiac. And
it is.
It certainly is one of the best ways we humans have to communicate. And I agree that certainly one lesson that people into kink and BDSM, I guess you could say, is a form of kink. I'm not sure I'm the one to really, you know, define the differences, but kink maybe is a little bit broader. But if you're into that, if you're into something that is a little bit non-vanilla, if you want to be happy, you first have to learn to be conscious of it, to be aware of what it is, and think about how much should be in fantasy and how much in reality, and then communicate to your partner, or maybe to a therapist or somebody, some other human. Because we humans, we need to communicate, just like bonobos. We don't do very well as islands of kink. you know, sometimes your kink is only to be shared with one person.
Right.
And that's fine. But it is difficult to just keep it to yourself. So it's good to at least try sharing. If you can't share it with a lover, maybe a therapist, or even some of these hotlines, you know, just to air it out a bit. It's a good idea. So the two C's, conscious and communicate.
I love that, the two C's, letting it be conscious first and then communicate it.
And even vanilla people, whatever that means, can learn from the kinky people that this is important, even when we're talking about basic sexual desires that aren't considered kinky. Still conscious of what your needs are and what your limits are and, you know, what your turn-ons are. Conscious, just to know this, just to educate yourself about yourself sexually, and then to be able to communicate that with someone. and to receive their communication, to be able to receive what turns them on and what their limits are.
There have been a couple of psychological papers published in journals lately about the psychological characteristics of BDSM practitioners, and it was once thought to be rather pathological, but no more, based on more recent research.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, this paper from 2013 said, we conclude that BDSM may be thought of as a recreational leisure rather than an expression of psychopathological processes. And I think we're seeing that more. Yeah.
It is
yeah.
a form of leisure, and it's, you know, it's dangerous, yeah, but so is hang gliding, which is another form of
mm-hmm.
leisure. And, yeah, hang gliding isn't necessarily a sexual thrill, although maybe it is for some daredevils. You
mm-hmm.
know, a lot of this is about sexual thrills,
mm-hmm.
and it is about channeling that animal side of us, whether you want to call it a bonobo or a tiger, that,
uh-huh.
you know, wants to break the rules. So you break the rules within the rules, you know. You maybe play these games that are a little taboo or a lot taboo in society, and yet you have rules for how to play these games so that, you know, you're not hurt, most likely.
So let's segue over to bonobos, your book.
Because they are the masters at that, really. They
yeah,
are.
They are. And so, but what do you mean? I mean, I've read your book thoroughly, and I know what you mean, but tell our listeners, what do you mean by bonobo BDSM?
Yes, yes, moving along the kink curve.
Yes, moving along
bonobos,
the kink curve.
Bonobos don't kill each other. We learned that in our other two sessions.
That we did.
They have a lot of sex. And if you watch them at the zoo, or if you're lucky enough to see them in the wild, or even just on a video, you can see that they combine various forms of what we might call roughhousing with sex.
Mm-hmm.
They're mm-hmm. always doing this. And they fight. They're not above a fight. They are not angels. They're animals, just like us.
Yeah.
And they, yet they don't kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
And their close cousins, common chimps, do kill each other. And, of
right.
course, their other close cousins, humans, unfortunately, sometimes do kill each other. Bonobos don't. They somehow know when to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, I think, to a very almost mathematical point of view, what it comes down to. They
mm-hmm.
they fight. And they have disagreements, and just like we do, and we sometimes take our disagreements into killing. And sometimes this has to do with property rights, and we talked about that before, and how war and things like that might come out of just a certain form of materialism. And yet, common chimps aren't materialistic like that. They don't own vast, you know, land masses, but they do have a sense of some property, and they do make war on each other, and they do kill over their disagreements. So why don't bonobos? Well, they seem to use sex to reduce violent tension. As primatologist Franz de Waal points out so succinctly, common chimps resolve sexual issues with power. Bonobos resolve power issues with sex.
Yes.
So, like most primates,
make love, not war.
They make love, not war, and their mm-hmm. making of love is what keeps them from making war.
Yes.
And they do it in a way like some human BDSM players. I should say BDSM, just in case you're wondering what the initials stand for. Bondage
oh, yeah,
and discipline.
You.
Dominance
yeah.
and submission, sadomasochism is the last, sadism and masochism. Okay.
Yes.
So bonobos are a lot looser about this than we are. Obviously, they don't have handcuffs and they don't have ropes, but like most primates, bonobos have a dominant submissive hierarchy through their chain of command. It is much more fluid than their common chimp cousins, but there is a hierarchy, and they do some sucking up, you know, in terms and in all senses of the term. And much of the sexual servicing and slavish grooming that the subordinate bonobos perform for the alpha bonobos is very similar to a human submissive's body worship of his or her mistress or master. Bonobos' play demonstrates that consensual pain and pleasure can be next-door neighbors. They just have to be managed. Now, how do bonobos manage them? We're still studying bonobos to determine just how they manage skirting along. How do they prevent themselves from turning a bite and a twist of the arm into killing someone? How do they prevent that? Obviously they do use sex, but the details of how they prevent that still need to be studied.
What has been discovered so far, or what, I mean, you're intimately involved with and have, you've been interested in bonobos for how long, 30 years, 25?
Let's see. Oh, my God, you're aging me.
I know.
Not my fault. Well, since 1994. I first discovered them. So that is like 23 years. 21 years.
So what's your best hunch about this? How they manage their aggression?
Well, one thing is they do turn it into sex.
Yes, of course.
One thing is the bonobo boys have this thing they do where they get together and they're fighting over something, and then somehow one bonobo kind of becomes submissive to the other and gives that bonobo a sexual favor. Or they both do this thing they call penis fencing, which is very interesting, and happens throughout nature. When bonobos do the penis fencing, it seems to stop them from erupting into a more lethal form of violence. In fact, it's not violent at all. It does make them feel good. And by the way, on that count, I'll give a shout out to Carrie Weissman, who just did an alternate article in which she interviews me about the bro job among humans, but points out the bonobo background of penis fencing as something that, yes, bonobos who are not quote-unquote gay, they're, I guess you could say, bisexual. They certainly have sex with females, but they also have sex with each other, and this is one of the forms of sex they have. Now, another thing that helps to keep the peace in Bonoboville, and this is very key, is the way the females also have sex with each other. Bonobo bisexuality is integral to Bonobo BDSM, because the females develop a female solidarity by having sex with each other. Their form of sex is similar to the penis fencing. They're kind of vulva rubbing in something they call genito-genital rubbing, the primatologists call it, but the Magondu people of the rainforest call it hoka-hoka, which I think sounds
sexier.
And the females do it to give each other orgasms and fun, and they also do it for social political reasons. There is also definitely a hierarchy. Usually it's the older female that kind of lays back on her throne, so to speak, and the younger female, in sucking up to her, and she might literally lick her all over and lick her genitals and suck up, and then she almost inevitably does this hoka-hoka rubbing of her genitals against the older female's genitals in order to feel good, many reasons. And one of them is a worship, a form of appreciation, and a creation of female solidarity so that if that younger female is attacked by the males, for instance, in a negative way, a non-consensual way, if a male is so bold as to rape or try to rape a young bonobo female, then her older consort will call upon her other female friends, and they'll all stop the male.
Yes,
and
yes.
They might school him in a BDSM type of way, meaning they'll stop him, they'll hurt him, and then, you know, they'll perform a sex act that makes him feel better. And teaches him the lesson, don't, you know, F with us.
Right.
You know, don't mess with us non-consensually like that.
Right.
And you're going to get hurt if you do. You're not going to get killed, but you're going to get hurt.
Right.
Let your brothers know this. And this is, I guess I call this a form of bonobo BDSM. It's you know, a mixture of pleasure and pain that helps to discipline the community so that they are peaceful and they have a lot
peaceful.
Of fun. And isn't that what we like to do, we humans, be peaceful and have a lot of fun, especially at our kinky
have a
parties.
Lot of fun. Absolutely. That's great. So what does bonobo sex tell us about pleasure and pain? You know, we're you know, as somebody who practices BDSM, I don't very often. I'm more in the vanilla camp, but I need to know about this because as a sex therapist, it's very unhelpful to be judgmental. You do what is not useful.
Absolutely.
I think,
and as we were saying, there's so much that, you know, so-called vanilla people can learn from the BDSM and kink communities about, you know, consent and about awareness of your desires. About how to communicate your desires. These are things that kink and BDSM people kind of have to do more specifically and deliberately, but it would behoove vanilla people to do it too, you know, to be
Absolutely.
Conscious of what we like and what we don't like and to communicate and to
and
be
to
aware that even in vanilla sex, there's a playing with pleasure and pain, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, penetration. Come
right.
on. I mean, if you're penetrated, it's going to hurt a little, but you don't want it to hurt too much. If it doesn't hurt a little, I don't know, there's not much friction. Sex is about friction. There's a little bit of give and take. Now, it depends on your threshold, how much you want. BDSM people tend to want more than vanilla people. They also tend to go into fetishes that go away from the basic sex act of, you know, intercourse. Although vanilla people, I guess in the old days, oral sex used to be considered kinky. Now it's not really. Although maybe in certain cultures it is. What is kinky?
Yeah.
I mean, kinky is almost anything except procreative sex. In a way, kinky is just having sex for pleasure.
Right.
In a way. And I think we can learn a lot from the kink community, we who are, might be more vanilla. And, of course, we can learn a lot from the bonobos because, well, they're all kind of kinky. They do a lot of play that is not procreative. And they teach us that play that is not procreative is natural and is normal and has to be managed. They manage it. See, among common chimps, it's also kind of natural and normal, but they don't manage it, at least in my opinion, so well. I mean, nothing against the common chimps, but they do kill each other. They do have
right.
a form
That's
of
That's not
war.
Managing it.
know, they're. I'm a peacenik, you know, and so I say they're not. I'm not saying they're an inferior species. I just believe that, you know, we can learn more from bonobos and their peacefulness and the way that they manage pain and the way that they manage violence and the way that they keep it from going into the lethal zone. And this is something that BDSM people need to learn very much so, because what they do is dangerous. I am a consultant to the L.A. District Attorney's Office, and not the District Attorney's Office, sorry, the other one, the defense attorneys the public defenders, the ones that don't get very much money, but they do sometimes bring in an expert when there has been an accidental death in a BDSM situation, because the jury is often swayed by the district attorney to feel that, you know, not only was this person killed, but they were killed with torture, so that's even worse. So they should really, you know, be put away forever or get the death penalty or something. And what I would say is, hey, there was an accident that took place here. It's a terrible accident, and this person maybe should be punished for negligence, but they didn't deliberately kill their partner. It's a form of BDSM that needs management, and obviously they need more, you know, they shouldn't ever do this, but just the awareness and the understanding that it was not a deliberate murder, I think, is important to ascertain.
Well, we're back to really good communication that BDSM practitioners need, and to have the safe word and really just manage it really, really well.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's the idea of BDSM is partly, you know, trust and...
Right.
And the danger, putting yourself into a dangerous position and trusting the other person. So, you know, you need to be educated, you need to communicate, and you also need to be aware that the American courts have very little education about this and will definitely hold you responsible if there is an accident.
If there's an accident. Now, going back to the term that you used, sucking up, you say in your book there is a lot of sucking up involved in all senses of the term. You
yes.
do write with humor, and I love it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Much of the sexual servicing, I'm quoting your book now, and slavish grooming that subordinate bonobos perform with the alphas bears resemblance to human submissives' body worship. Let's
right.
talk a little bit, because bonobos do engage in
mm-hmm.
body worship. So let's talk about
definitely.
That.
Oh, definitely. I've seen it at the zoo, the way they just lick and lick over and over, just like tantric sex practitioners. They're very, very loving, very sensuous, and yes, sometimes there is a hierarchy going on. Sometimes it's just two young bonobos just going at each other in a quote-unquote equal way, or at least a way that I don't perceive as dominant and submissive as an outside viewer, but sometimes it's very clear that, you know, it's usually an older bonobo and usually an older female, although sometimes a male, who is the recipient of slavish licking and kind of massaging, attention giving. Sometimes this is in exchange for a little treat, you know, because after all, often the alpha female is the one who gets first dibs on the food when there's a food discovery made. And at the zoo, of course, when the food comes out, the alpha female gets, you know, her picks of the food. And then the others get to get food. But she might get the choicest pieces, so somebody that wants one of those pieces might, you know, slavishly worship her body, including her feet, perhaps, genitalia, hands, breasts, other body parts.
The erogenous zones,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they know all
you
about
know,
the erogenous
feet
zones.
And, of course, feet and hands with all the nerve endings and, of course, the genitals. So, but do you think that with these older females that there's a certain sense of entitlement. You know, I've lived a long time, and so you younger ones need to suck up to me.
You could call it entitlement. I guess, if mm-hmm. you were, I don't know, that sounds a little bit like they're, I mean, they are entitled because they have done
yes.
the sucking up in their own youth. And
that's what
and
I mean.
They might do some anyway now. It's not as though they never do it. But, yeah, I think they are also the peacemakers. They have learned.
Uh-huh.
See, bonobos, they learn a lot from life just like we do. You know, one thing they teach us is that they're not all about instinct, and neither are a lot of what we call other animals. We think we're all the only ones that have a culture, but they have a culture, and these older females are the most, you know, the professors of their culture. And so, you know, they're teaching as they are being worshipped. So they are definitely giving back to the younger ones as they're being worshipped, whether that's in the form of giving wisdom or, you know, an extra banana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that so much. Wisdom, and those of us who are older and more experienced as humans, we're often mentors to younger people.
Well, I think that that's very important for us to learn from bonobos and to see how our you know, civilization has, you know, kind of damaged that in a way, and that maybe we need to rediscover that cultural dynamic.
Mm.
And bonobos show us that it is very natural not to cast aside. I mean, what is the reason that we women, we live beyond our reproductive years? You know, I mean, the grandmother hypothesis is well and good, but bonobos show us that it goes beyond just caring for your own children. It goes into caring for the community and helping the males and the other females to keep the peace, because that is, well, among the bonobos, that's imperative. It's imperative. Among us, you know, hey, you know, we make war. Maybe this is the result of not honoring our older females.
And, of course, as you pointed out in our first two programs on this, bonobos are a matriarchal society, and I think that's the main reason. I mean, we sometimes joke that if women ruled the world, everybody would be getting massages instead of going to war.
Yeah. And you know, if women ruled the world, guess what? We wouldn't really rule the world, because we'd share with the guys.
We'd share.
As the bonobos do. They are kind of matriarchal, but in a way, it's more accurate to say they share the rule, because, yes, within the community, the bonobo females are more in charge, but the bonobo males are the protectors of the community, and they do a lot of, they run a lot of things, but they share their rule. They're not like the other great ape species where it's totally patriarchal and totally male dominant. The bonobo males share the rule, and guess what? It makes them stay younger longer. That is one thing that scientists have discovered, is that for various reasons, I like to attribute it to their lifestyle. They sort of are seeing, their lifestyle and their hormonal balance, that bonobo males retain, sort of like have this youthful essence that they never lose, whereas common chimps turn into grumpy old apes as soon as they leave their childhood, because of all the stress, other males trying to kill them, the stress of trying to mate with females that are cowering and running away from them, the competition. Bonobo males mate with females who are excited about sex, and their brothers, you know, don't kill them. So it's a nice life.
It's a nice life, and there's so many parallels to healthy humans who
mm-hmm.
get older and remain sexual.
Yeah.
And it keeps us healthy and happy.
Yeah.
But I love that in common chimps, the old guys turn into grumpy old boys because they've had so much stress.
Yeah, and it's before they're even old. It's just when they leave their youth, they really get old prematurely and angry and depressed. And bonobo boys are pretty happy. They're mama's boys.
We touched on that in the previous show, but to expand on that a little bit.
Well, it is part of the whole culture that bonobo boys are very close to their moms, and whereas the girls leave home, and this is I think a part of why they're strong, is they migrate away from their mother and their birth community into another community, and there is where they learn to suck up to the older females and, just generally be good, sexy, peaceful members of the community. Now, bonobo boys, they never leave home. They always are accompanied by their mama throughout their life. And, in fact, their first sex partners, not mom, they don't have sexual intercourse with mom. They do a lot of licking and playing and, touching. But, that's the one taboo is bonobo boys don't seem to have sexual intercourse with their mothers. But all their mother's friends, they definitely have sexual intercourse with their mother's friends, which include the older ones and the younger ones. They're treated like little princes, basically. And, of course, all the ladies love, they develop love affairs with the boys because of this dynamic. I'm not saying this needs to go on just this way in human society, and please make a big note. This is very particular to Bonoboville, of the natural bonobos, the real bonobos. I do think, though, that it bears studying, and that we need to think about this in terms of, certain cliches that have some truth, like, certain kinds of boys, want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad, because essentially the mother is so important. One of my mentors is James Prescott, Dr. James Prescott, and he has studied various primates as well as humans in different cultures and determined that a very liberal sex life does lead to nonviolence in cultures around the world. He also has studied, mothers and sons and just generally the whole need of babies to be close to their mother in those early years in order to develop in a healthy way.
So it's, I think, attachment theory even comes in here.
There you go.
Yes, because if we look at adult relationships through the lens of attachment theory, the man or the woman who had a close relationship with mom was available with eye contact, with kisses, with hugs. So actually, that's secure attachment. So actually,
Yes, very, very important.
It's freer to explore the world because mom says, as opposed to anxious attachment or avoidant attachment, mom says, the world is great. Go out and explore. And the toddler can come back after exploring and knowing that mom is there. And I bet there are parallels to that going on in bonobo.
Absolutely. Very strongly. And, to some degree with the girls, up until, of course, they leave, but definitely with the boys. And
Dr. Susie, why do the girls leave? I have an idea.
Well, somebody has to migrate so they don't just all keep inbreeding, because they all have sex with each other, except that mother-son relationship. They all are having sex. So if the girls were to stay, and by the way, the common chimps also migrate. I mean, all of us migrate, we mammals, in order to keep the gene population fresh.
Right.
That's a basic reproductive imperative. So they leave, and the girls leave, and it's kind of a little tough, but it toughens the girls. The girls are a tougher breed, I think, in a way, because they leave. But the boys are sensitive, you know, and wonderful lovers, and yes, they have fangs, and they're bigger than the girls, but they don't kill them, and they rarely rape. And if they do rape, they get schooled by the girls' girlfriends, and they don't rape again.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So how does that happen?
Well, because
there are a lot of built-in controls, aren't there, within
the
bonobo?
There are. This is the essence of bonobo BDSM, is the discipline.
The discipline.
And the way that they teach each other. Some of it, I guess, is instinctual, you know. I think we even have it instinctually that we don't really want to kill each other. I think that's an instinct, not to kill each other. But
right.
Yet you always have to learn, if you like to play, and you like to play rough, how to control, how to discipline.
Yeah.
You know, and bonobos have to learn this, and they can't write up BDSM contracts because they don't know how to write, although they do know how to communicate via computers, so who knows. But in any case, they do have a culture. Yes,
wow.
They communicate with us and even with each other via computer pictograms. If they're taught that at an early age, which they are in a place called Bonobo Hope in Iowa, which is a controversial place, but Dr. Sue Savage Rumbaugh has established this place and has taught several bonobos, most notably Kanzi, who's one of the stars of my book, actually, and many books. Kanzi can converse with many different people as well as with his own children through pictograms on the computer.
That is fascinating. Why? I mean, it just shows the high intelligence of these bonobos.
Oh, yeah.
But why
the way
is it
they're more intelligent than us? They can speak our language. We can't speak theirs.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, there's different forms of intelligence, you know.
Yes, of course, of course. That was a very important discovery, I think, in the 70s by a Harvard guy. Different kinds of intelligence.
No, a Yale guy. I think it, well, I, at
oh,
least
you're
I'm Yale-y, thinking of emotional
but I thought
intelligence.
It was, well, yeah, but then there's mathematical intelligence and all kinds of sexual intelligence.
Sexual intelligence. I'll give a shout out to Dr. Marty Klein, who wrote a book called Sexual Intelligence, who is quoted in The Bonobo Way. Hi, Marty. And I also want to give a shout out to Dr. Peter Salovey, who is the president of Yale now, and he came up with the concept and wrote the book on emotional intelligence. Well, actually, he came up with the concept. Daniel Golson, I believe, wrote the book, but
no, Goldman was EQ guy.
One of those things. But Peter Salovey came up with the idea of testing for emotional intelligence, and that there is this kind of thing called emotional intelligence. And certainly, bonobos show us how important that is. In one interesting test, where the bonobos were doing some task, and the common chimps were also doing this task, and they wanted to see who would get it done faster. And the common chimps are said to be better with tools than bonobos, but the common chimps wound up fighting and couldn't come up with the solution to the task. And a bonobo female wound up winning the contest because she engaged her fellow bonobos in helping her to finish the task. So the bonobos won the most
teamwork.
Intelligent, probably, you know, you could say because of their emotional intelligence in terms of working together and not being competitive.
Yes. Now, you also talk about humans and bonobos enjoy erotic restraint as well as sexual freedom. And you discuss this in your book. I'm looking at your book right now, on page 159. By the way, listeners, if you don't have Dr. Susan Block's book, The Bonobo Way, The Evolution of Peace Through Pleasure. You must get this.
And thank you.
You're welcome.
Great endorsement.
And by the way, what's the best way? Why don't you say it? I mean, I could, but
the best way to get it is really Amazon. Just write in
right.
The Bonobo Way, and it's the only book called The Bonobo Way. But if
right.
you want to go to my site and look at all the great reviews, and I mean, some of the great reviews are on Amazon, but more are on the site, and you know, some interviews. That's BonoboWay.com. Actually, it's TheBonoboWay.com, TheBonoboWayBook.com. I got you every which way. And I also have a social media site that is inspired by the bonobos, and that is BonoboVille.com. And again, a portion of all proceeds, if there are proceeds, and sometimes there are, go to Lolia Bonobo, which is a sanctuary in Congo run by Claudine André, which is helping to save the bonobo orphans who are left behind when hunters shoot the adult bonobos, which is a horrible situation. And we also contribute to Bonobo Conservation Initiative run by our friend Sally Cox. And that organization is developing a bonobo peace forest and educating people in that area that surrounds the bonobos' native habitat about how important the bonobos are and how to protect them from these hunters.
It's very good of you to give some of the proceeds
I guess
back.
It's good. I guess, you know,
yeah.
Doing good feels good. That's a whole chapter in the book, you know, doing
Absolutely.
Good feels good. It's hedonic kindness, and, you know, it's so important to me. I feel as though, you know, it's just like a mother helps her children. You don't have to question that. I help my cousins. They're the bonobos.
Of course, your cousins. I like that a lot.
And yours
well,
too.
You know, actually,
and you're helping them, too, by promoting this.
Of course. You know, in a related story, Dr. Lewis Terman, in 1921, started something that has now been called the Longevity Project, mm-hmm. where he was at Stanford, and he recruited 1,200 kindergartners from around the Bay Area. And then he followed them for many years. And after he died, two other psychologists took this up. And there are two points of this study that are related to what we're talking about. And one is that it turns out that what you give out and offer generously is way more important to your longevity than what you take.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that Dr. Terman interviewed women about their orgasms 60 years before Sex and the City came on the air. And so it turns out that the women who had sexually satisfying orgasms and sex life and more orgasms lived the longest.
Well, there you go. It is refreshing.
They know about this, too. Yes, that's right.
Orgasm a day keeps the doctor away, I guess.
Absolutely. No, that's I believe it.
I
absolutely believe it. And maybe several orgasms a day.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Not to get greedy, but, you know.
At least one, but, yeah, more, you know. It's not like apples. It's not like you can eat too many.
That's right. And then you end up after the orgasm in this kind of, oxytocin floating state fueled by more dopamine and,
mm-hmm.
right? So all that good
mm-hmm.
stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I'm imagining that the bonobos get that too.
Of course. Of course.
Yes.
I think any animal gets that, that pleasure, that, you know, rejuvenation from pleasure and sexual activity. And I think, bonobos keep themselves in this sort of intoxicated state, I think, by constantly rubbing on each other and that kind of thing. You know, but that they do have their, you know, their friction as well. You know, sometimes you need to feel tension in order to feel release.
Yes.
That's the thing. That's the challenge of I think, just life. I it's not even just being human. I think the bonobos have that challenge, too. That, you know, if all you have is pleasure, you kind of, well, that's good. You fall asleep. But a little bit of tension, I mean, that, you know, that's why people like to, you know, fight and then kiss and make up. Makeup sex, very hot.
Makeup sex.
Now, in a way,
yeah.
Bonobo BDSM is like makeup sex, except you're not really fighting. The fighting is play. You know, it's play fighting so that then you can make up, and then you get that tension going, so then the release, the orgasm, is even greater than if you just start from a basic, you know, pleasurable state. You start from a state of friction. So, I mean, this is part of the idea. And you were asking before about erotic restraint, I know I'm being a little anthropomorphic, but I do feel that bonobos do demonstrate this restraint, and of course, common chimps do restrain their violent impulses too. They restrain; they don't just let loose all the time. But their form of discipline appears to be enforced through the constant fear of being beaten or killed by big, strong males. Whether you're male or female, you're afraid of that. So that's what keeps you restrained. Now, bonobo discipline involves a kind of gentler, more playful, and yes, more erotic form of schooling in which the elders steer the younger members of the tribe toward controlling their violent impulses through the giving of pleasure. Mm-hmm. A little bit of pain, but mostly pleasure, most often meted out by alpha females, but then this becomes something everybody learns, and this becomes their form of erotic discipline that keeps the community playing and not killing.
Dr. Susie, why do you call bonobos the most femdom apes on Earth? So the most femdom—that's an expression.
Femdom is a good word, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Femdom is a phrase that's used by female dominance. It's a shorthand for female domination. And it's a bit of a play on words, of course, but at the same time, yeah, bonobos really do honor their females, and a lot of them are the older females that are honored the most, and it's kind of a femdom society. I mean, you know, I think that the BDSM players that are into the worship of the female should check out the bonobos and see the natural source of that.
There's mm-hmm. also worship of the female in tantra sexuality, and an attitude that Brian, my fiance, has that I really like a lot is worship your woman, and the goddess will reward you.
You know, I mean, I think the bonobos have their own way of saying that, and they believe that.
I think they do.
They do kind of worship the females. Then the older females get the most, you know, positive attention. They also seem to get the most food. They get the best places to set their nest up at night, you know, and they seem to mete out the punishments to the males that get out of line. And they also help to broker peace when it needs to be brokered. When there is a conflict that needs outside support, the older females come in and they go, hey, calm down, and maybe one of you will get a blowjob, or both.
I love that. That'll be your reward, and that will further calm you down.
Well, yeah, they do believe in calming down negative touch with positive touch. Although sometimes you need to do a little negative touch to just prevent more of the other negative touch. Like if somebody's raping somebody, you might need to punch him. But you don't necessarily
need
to kill him.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well,
and the bonobo females, what's very important is they stick up for each other. See, one bonobo female against an adult male is always going to lose because mm-hmm. the male has fangs and he's stronger. But any bonobo female understands, and this is part of the wisdom, understands you get your sisters involved, preferably two or three of them, and that male has to back down. It is to some extent strength against strength, you know, if it has to come to that. Sometimes it doesn't have to come to that. You could just, you know, I've seen bonobo females just glare at a male and that will stop him. But if he's really kind of on a tear, then you need to bring your sisters in. And yes, in Bonoboville, you know, you can count on your sisters. Your sisters have you back. And they're not even your real sisters. Whereas among common chimps, chimps, the females, if one female gets raped or even killed, the other females scatter.
Oh. These bonobos have so much wisdom. Mm-hmm. And we need to stop at a couple of minutes before the top of the hour.
Yes.
This is your life work. And it's really worthwhile.
Thank you.
And you've written this fabulous book, and people love it, and I'm going to write a review. I haven't yet.
All right. And you've done three fabulous interviews, though.
Thank you. I'm swamped with clients and lectures, as you are, but I will get to it, I promise you, before... So I'm glad I get to see you Saturday
night.
Yeah,
you're going
to
get to see me
great.
Saturday. That'll be fun.
That'll be a lot of fun.
We'll celebrate Kink Month and you know, go bonobos.
Yes, go bonobos.
All right.
Don't you feel that you're a fortunate woman to have landed on this idea and that you're spreading the word?
Well, I feel fortunate in many, many ways. I guess
of
landed on
do.
This idea. Yeah, I guess. I guess the bonobos found me, and I am very fortunate. I feel very blessed to help people to make that connection between us and our kissing cousins. And I think it's just very important we make it for the future of humanity, and also the future of the bonobos. Because at this point, they need us. You know, we're responsible for them almost going extinct, and we have to help to save them. And they will help us save ourselves.
Thank you, Dr. Susie, so much.
Thank you, Dr. Diana.
We'll do this again.
Absolutely.
We'll do this again. See you Saturday.
Okay,
bye-bye.
See you Saturday.
Bye.
My boy Getty, tap, tap, tap.